From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I tell my kids that every morning. I say, you know, if you're still here and you look in the mirror and you're still breathing and smiling, the good Lord has a plan for you, and it's in your future, not in your past. So let's get about the Lord's business. And we are pleased to welcome in Father Memo, the Director of Vocations for the Diocese of Sacramento.
Thank you, Bob.
He's about to send me up to Mount Angel.
To be a seminarian?
To be a
seminarian. I think it's too late. I don't think your family
can,
will be
can
happy.
Can I take the kids and my wife with me?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. We do have a few Catholic priests that are married. Not in another right, but people who have come over from certain faiths with very special dispensations who were married or are married and were able to become Catholic priests when they converted. But very few. But we do have a few.
Very few. There is also the situation of other men, other than you were talking about, these men who were married and then they were widowers.
Widowers, right.
Or they were divorced. They were married maybe civilly only.
Right.
I know the case of a man who was married in the church, but then the marriage was annulled.
Right.
And so they are free right. from any bond and commitment because right. maybe their children are grown up. So those men are also accepted. It's a possibility for
exactly.
those men to be accepted if they achieve or they
yeah.
have all the qualifications that we're expecting from a man.
Correct. And occasionally we'll see a minister from maybe the Lutheran faith or Episcopalian who is married, who converts to Catholicism yeah. and decides, you know, and obviously with the permission of the bishop. It's rare, but we have a few in the United States. And
yeah, even in our diocese, we have one.
Yes.
Father Jeff.
Right.
He is serving in the in Travis
uh-huh.
Air Force Base.
Right.
And he's married because he used to be
an Anglican priest. Sure.
And he was converted to Catholicism. And it was a long journey of...
Yes, very long. Yeah.
You know, growing in his Catholic faith and such until Bishop took him in.
Mm-hmm.
And he also had to do a certain formation to be a Catholic
sure.
priest. And now he's a priest.
Yeah.
And a married man.
And it's yeah. rare but interesting.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm not sure, but some of the ones that are completely in communion with Rome, do allow married priests.
Correct. There are some rites in the Catholic Church, because in the Catholic
right.
Church there are several rites.
Right.
Some of those rites allowed men to be married, but
right.
they have to be married while they are seminarians.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
yeah.
No, later on.
Right.
So if a man arrives to priesthood single, that man has to remain single forever.
Right.
If that man feels that God is calling him to be a married man, so he has to be married before being ordained as
right.
priest.
Right. And is it similar with deacons? Virtually all of our deacons are married, but if they're not married when they're ordained, then they do not get married?
Correct.
Yeah.
There is a deacon that I know. He's in Chico. His name is Father Deacon Jesus. Wonderful man. He became deacon when he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he knew that once he became a deacon, he needed to stay single, and he's single till now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Wonderful witness of God's mercy and chastity.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So you have all kinds of things going on in vocations, but first, it's been difficult, hasn't it, during COVID, I would think.
Yes, it is, because there are less opportunities to be in touch with people in person.
Right.
But also, thanks to the means of communications, I have been able to reach out to many more people that I would not expect.
Right.
Through retreats, through masses online, through talks online, through events that the different departments of the diocese are organizing, like the Department of Youth and Young Adults,
mm-hmm.
they are constantly doing activities online.
Right.
And sometimes I have been able to participate in those
mm-hmm.
activities. And that's a great opportunity for me to be in touch with people that otherwise I would never know.
Right. And they're not necessarily vocation events, like on fire. But there's certainly opportunity for witnessing.
correct. Everything is an opportunity. Yeah. And the important is for young people to know that God speaks to them and God is calling them to find holiness. And God is constantly reminding them that they are called to be holy in the way, rather through the vocation that God has for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You must have times when, and I know you're very big on discernment. You don't want somebody coming in for the wrong reasons, and not morally wrong reasons, but just reasons that you think won't work as a priest. But you want to encourage people. It must be a difficult talk sometimes to tell a person who thought maybe they want to become a priest that you actually think maybe that's not the right path.
It has happened a few times. The approach that I have for young men is when they come and they say, well, I'm open to discern the vocation to priesthood. What I do with them is I start a journey with them. Mm-hmm. We meet every month. I ask the man to have a spiritual director, to be involved in a parish ministry, mm-hmm. and some of them to have a psychology. Because all of us are broken, and some of us need more help than others.
Right.
Nowadays, most of us need help, psychological help, yeah. because we are kind of mess.
Amen.
It's a mess inside of us, starting with myself. So with these three accompaniments, spiritual director, work in the parish, and sometimes psychological help, is how we accompany a young man in his journey of discernment. And there are six men that are in that journey mm-hmm. right now, six men who are discerning very seriously their vocation. And all of them have, most of them have the three companions, I would say, you know, mm-hmm. in their discernment. So,
no commitment from them or the diocese at this point.
No.
Yeah, right.
There is a certain commitment. The commitment is to be open mm-hmm. to discern and to meet with me and to be honest
right.
with me and with the church.
Right.
It's like a relationship, like a courtship. Mm-hmm. You know, you like a girl and you need to grow in that relationship until you are committed and
right.
you grow in the sense of commitment. So no one of those men I have to say, you know, you are not for this vocation mm-hmm. because eventually they realize, you know what, Father, yeah. I don't think that this is for me after a process, several mm-hmm. months of working,
right.
journeying with me, they say, you know, maybe this is not for me. I understand. Thank you very much. And we remain as friends.
Right.
They keep on attending some activities. Some of them are in the Newman Centers. So, nice. Only very few cases, I have had to say to the man, you know, I don't see you for this vocation.
Mm-hmm.
When there are clear signs that the man is not for here, you
right.
know. What I can say, well, most of the times, because maybe lack of clarity in mind,
uh-huh.
Or because the man, after a journey, certain time of journey, he keeps on feeling anxiety
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Anxiety, thinking on priesthood
right.
and nervousness. But while he thinks of having a girlfriend, so he feels more peace and such. So
mm-hmm.
it's only a few cases.
Very good. So we hear that term spiritual advisor a lot. And I think a lot of lay people don't have spiritual advisors. What do we mean when we say a spiritual advisor? Is it always a clergy member?
A spiritual advisor can be many people, can be lay people,
mm-hmm.
Can be a permanent, a clergy is a deacon, permanent deacon is a clergy. But also there are lay people, lay women, who are trained to be spiritual advisors or spiritual directors. I know, for instance, St. Ignatius
mm-hmm.
Of Loyola Parish, they train people to be spiritual directors. So because they have a whole course of a formation,
mm-hmm.
they give formation to those men and women who after several months or even years, they learn to become spiritual directors. And
right.
that's beautiful. Also, in different parishes, there are always people of wisdom. There are wise people that they know the scriptures, the basic knowledge of the scriptures. They know they have the basic knowledge of the Catholic teachings. And they have especially the experience of their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And they can accompany some people in the parishes. So that's
right.
that's very possible.
Very good. So we're maybe almost out of COVID. What did you learn about your ministry during COVID that you will carry over into normal times?
Social media.
Social media, yeah.
Yeah,
Zoom,
radio, Instagram, Facebook. You know, before COVID, we took social media, most of us, like just for entertainment or simple communication.
Right.
But now social media is a wonderful tool for evangelization and be connected with people that otherwise wouldn't be able to be connected with. So social media, that's one thing. Secondly, is another thing that I learned is that we need constantly to be creative, always, because the Holy Spirit, that's the way how the Holy Spirit works, you know, through creativity, bringing new things to humanity, to evangelize us, to bring us closer to God. So that's a second thing that I learned. Oh my gosh, what else I learned in this through this COVID experience? That that human beings are fragile. We are very fragile. Yeah. And we are in need of each other. We are in need of so much compassion towards each other and patience.
Yeah.
Patience. Before COVID, we felt strong because we could things, many things. We had the capacities and talents and the opportunities to do it. During COVID, many of those opportunities were broken. Mm-hmm. Our capacities and skills were not in use anymore, you know, because we couldn't use them many times, like those who work in restaurants, those who work in construction, those who work in offices. We have to learn to work from home and stop doing what we used to do. So that made us understand that we are not overpowerful, that we are not that powerful as we thought.
Right.
And that bring opportunity for us to grow in humility and ask for help to those who surround us. So, yeah.
You know, I was talking to somebody in the last few weeks. I forget quite what topic we were on or even who it was, but they said that there's no substitute for in-person retreats. You know, the weekend retreat or the week-long retreat where everybody goes away from everything, puts their cell phone at the door, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. But we didn't have that opportunity. And, you know, one day we'll have it again.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully.
Still, you know, I had the opportunity to attend several retreats online, and they were awesome. Very good.
Really? Yeah.
Because that's another thing. That was another challenge for all those who are preachers. Mm-hmm. We needed to develop our capacity to preach in a way that, since I didn't have the people in front of me.
No eye contact.
No eye contact. So I need to make sure that my preaching and the message that I convey is strong and clear enough to help the person that is watching me or listening to me on the other side of the screen. So... because on the contrary, when you are in person, it's kind of easier. You move, you jump, you smile, you cry, and so it's easier, more or less, to be connected with people. But when you are not seeing them, you don't see their reactions. You just have to trust in God's mercy and to present something better.
I had to be master of ceremonies for an online event, about a month ago, and I said to my wife, I'm not going to tell a joke. I like to open and tell a few jokes and loosen people up, you know. And I said, I will tell a joke, and no one will laugh. And I'll go, man, that was bad. That one was a dud. You know, nobody liked it. They're going to boo, you know. And I'm thinking. I remember the very first time I saw my pastor, Father Ray, you know, celebrating Mass. Alone, I mean, basically alone, or camera person in there, and that not much else, and thinking, you know, and he's the kind of guy who'll tell a joke, and is very very familiar with the congregation, and to think that, and sometimes comes down in front and engages us, you know, and to think that he's no eye contact, nobody smiling, nobody nodding. Nobody getting up and walking out.
Yeah,
nothing.
The same.
I can't even imagine how hard that would be, especially if you're used to the opposite. You know, and you're right. You would have to really, really hone your skills.
At least that happened to me. Not yet ready. I mean, I need to grow more, of course. But at least it happened to me, and I saw the same happening with my brother priests and other preachers and people who deliver talks.
Yeah. Well, that's hard stuff.
No, thank you. Thank you for this question. You know, they are very good. You are making me think about kind of making a summary of this experience of the COVID and praying with the whole world and with Pope Francis about the end of this pandemic.
Yeah.
And giving thanks for the good things that we learned from this period.
Well, I think one thing, I know the schools, you know, they got back very quickly because they really had a plan. But, you know, they were asking teachers to do in-person and online, the same person, you know, and which is straight out heroism as far as I'm concerned. It's just tremendous, you know.
I don't know how they managed those teachers.
I don't know how they did either, you know, and not a whisper of a complaint from anybody.
My goodness, this is amazing.
This is not what I was hired to do, and they just all did it. They were on mission, you know. So one of the principals told me they were all part of the mission, and this was just what, this is, you know, we didn't know we were going to have to hike across a river, but there it is, so we're going to do it, you know. And because the mission is to get to the other side. And this fall, they've decided, instead of having it online in every school for those that still need it or want it or mm-hmm. whatever reason, sometimes maybe they're living with grandma and grandpa or something and they need to still be at home, they're going to have an academy, an online academy. For anybody in the diocese, that frees up these other teachers to just be in-person teachers.
Okay.
And then there will be one academy for someone in Red Bluff, someone in Elk Grove. And they're putting the word out to, like, Yreka and Alturas and all these places saying, the remote places saying, if you're interested in Catholic education, we can now offer it to you. If you want your child to go to Catholic school, well, how close is the nearest elementary school to Alturas? Maybe 150 miles, you know.
That's
I think
amazing.
The nearest elementary school is in Redding. And you're way up in the north corner of the state in Modoc County. And, you know, you may get three or four or five of those kids that mm-hmm. never had the opportunity to go to Catholic school before. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty ingenious, I think.
I love that. I love that. And it's amazing to hear that that's happening.
Yeah.
Wow. You make me think of my experience with doing the Covaris last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully this year. Last year we had 40 young men attending the retreat mm-hmm. of Covaris. And those men were from every place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to travel
right.
nor to nothing because they were in the safety of their homes
sure.
attending the retreat. The same would happen this year. I hope also to have a good number of young men. By the way, I will make use of this opportunity to announce the Covaris, which is August 5th to 8th.
Okay.
Yes, it's that weekend of August.
Is it still planned as online or?
Correct. Yeah. It's going to be online. So it's still, you know, it's hard to put things together and people together.
And you don't know where we're going to be in August, but you can't take the chance.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why I wanted to do it based on the experience of last year, that it was not perfect, but we were able to give something to those young men and they liked it. Most of them liked it very much.
So August 5th to 8th and age range?
It's going to be from 13 to 17 years old, for teenagers.
Right, for teenagers, high school kids, yeah.
Exactly, for them to start asking the Lord the question of, God, what do you want of me?
Yeah.
How I can be happy in my life? By being a married man, by being a single holy man, or by being a priest mm-hmm. or religious brother?
They won't get to fish in the pond, but they will have the experience.
Yeah, exactly. That's the intention of this retreat of Covaris and the other activities that we are doing here in the Office of Vocations.
Yeah, that's great. I know On Fire, the great celebration in Vallejo at Six Flags, I didn't mean On Fire. They're going to do that in person this year, but maybe with down, but Ministry Days, almost same time, the week later. They did it last year virtual, and they really found that they were attracting people that you couldn't make that ride
exactly
too far, or it might have, they might have even lived closer, but didn't have the time. They didn't have that, and they could watch, they could sign up, and they could watch every single
workshop.
And hear the keynote. And
yeah, there are activities that are happening in person. There are activities that are still happening online.
Yeah.
We're still in this hybrid situation because we don't know how things will be by that time. Like, for instance, the dinner that we have, the vocations dinner happening on July 31st, that also we are inviting the audience to participate, hopefully. July 31st is going to be at St. Mary's here in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And we will have it. We were also debating whether to have it in person or only online.
Right.
And in the end, we decided, okay, let us do it in person. Let's see what happens.
Right.
But and with a limited number of people.
Initially, the people I've talked to have said 50% capacity, and we'll just see where we are in July. And it's July 31st, and I got to tell people, that is a fun event. It's an inspiring event.
It is.
I mean, it's not a carnival or a circus. There aren't going to be dancing elephants.
No.
But you'll get to meet the seminarians, which is always moving.
You get and to meet hear their stories.
Hear their stories, and they're really diverse.
Yeah.
You know, and then you meet their one time their parents of a seminarian spoke about how important it was for the family to be supportive of this, and Bishop Soto always speaks.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the altar servers get honored.
Yeah.
And the food's pretty darn good.
Yes, you know? It is, indeed.
So,
the Knights of Columbus do a great job with this.
Knights of Columbus puts it on and sponsors it. And the thing I like about it, too, is you move it around the diocese.
Yeah.
One year it's at St. Basil's. One year it's St. Patrick's in Placerville. Is that St. Patrick?
In Placerville, St. Patrick, yes.
Yeah, we had it in Placerville. I remember that one. They had the event usually started about 5:30. And it was a summer night, and one of my teenage daughters came with me, and I looked it up, and they had a Saturday vigil mass at 4:00, and I said, I haven't been in that church. Let's go to mass before the dinner, and it was one of those hot days, and the side door to the church was open, and the hall was right next to it, and there was kind of a breezeway between the church and the hall, and all of a sudden, about halfway through mass, we start smelling this just wonderful aroma.
Ooh.
It was tri-tip on the grill right outside. It was, the smoke was wafting. It was not incense. It was tri-tip. It was wafting
so
into the church.
Everybody
went to the dinner.
That's a good way to attract people.
It really is. So this year will be at St. Mary, 58th
St. Mary's.
Street here in Sacramento.
Correct. And July 31st.
Yeah, Saturday night.
RSVP with the local Knights of Columbus Council.
Yeah, anybody in your Knights Council in your parish, just RSVP there.
Very good.
So you've got some great events planned here.
Yeah, I'm excited to announce the same things. And thank you for giving this opportunity, Bob.
Oh, absolutely.
From Monday 24th to Sunday 30th of May, which is, I don't know when this program is going to be transmitted.
This coming week. So Monday, we're ahead of schedule, so 24 is fine.
Okay, very good. So this week of May 24th to Sunday, May 30th, we will be visiting different parishes of the diocese. And I call it Seminarians, Diocesan Pilgrimage. It's the first time that we're doing a pilgrimage. It's the very, very first time. So let us see how things go this year. Hopefully we can repeat it every year, because my idea is that the seminarians may have the opportunity to know different parishes of the diocese, to know their story behind, to meet their pastors.
Right.
And at the same time, why not to promote vocations, since we are visiting the parishes, to promote vocations as we are there.
Right.
So it's formative. The intention is to be formative for the seminarians as they build up in their bond in fraternity with each other, and they know more about their diocese.
Right.
At the same time, they can be, you know, available for young people to meet them. So it's like a different objectives that I have with this pilgrimage. And if you allow me.
Yeah, so absolutely. And these will be in person.
In person, of course, no virtual. It's going to be very, very, very in person.
So everybody wear a mask and you'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we will be, for instance, on Monday, we will visit the area of Vallejo. Mm-hmm. And we will be visiting different parishes around that area. Mm-hmm. But we will station to meet with young people at St. Vincent Ferrer at 7 p.m. We will meet there with all those young people. So parishes around that area of St. Vincent Ferrer in Vallejo, I invite you to come and participate.
And even people at in Fairfield at Holy Spirit and Lady of Mount Carmel.
Exactly.
They're 10 miles down the road.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Hopefully they can come. Then on Tuesday 25th, we will be visiting different parishes around Vallejo and Davis area, to the point that we will meet in Davis at 1:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. with whoever young person is there, 1:30 p.m. at St. James in Davis. And then that same day at 7:30, we will meet in St. Mary's, 7:30 in Vacaville, correct. Okay. To meet the young people
that's
there. 7:30, correct. Then on the next day, on Wednesday, May 26th, we will be in the area of Placerville and Amador County.
Jackson.
That area. Mm-hmm. So we will station to meet with young people at St. Catherine in Martel, California. Mm-hmm. That's going to be at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, May 26th in St. Catherine in Martel. Then next day we will move to the area of South Lake Tahoe.
Wow.
We will be there and we will meet with young people at 7:30 p.m. as in the Church of St. Teresa there in South Lake Tahoe. That's going to be on Thursday, May 27th.
I want to go to that one.
Hopefully, yes. Come and visit us. Yes. We'll be happy to see you there. Then Friday, May 28th, we will go from South Lake Tahoe all the way to
Marysville.
Correct. Thank you. And we will visit different parishes, of course, but we will station that evening at St. Joseph Marysville.
Right.
That's the place where we will gather with young people. That's going to be Friday, May 28th.
And all you have to do is look for the steeple. And you'll find St. Joseph.
That's a new one.
That is a tall steeple.
They remodeled. They did a remodeling recently. You know?
Yeah. It's a great historic church and
the first cathedral of the diocese.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It still looks like a cathedral. It's got the steps going up to it, and it's such an anchor in the town of Marysville. It really
and important for the history of not only the diocese but the whole California.
Oh, all of California, absolutely. Yeah. History of the gold rush, everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So that's going to be Friday, May 28th at 6 p.m. In St. Joseph.
Okay,
it's not going to be 6 p.m. It's going to be 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Okay.
Then Saturday, May 29th, we will be in the area of Chico, but for different reasons, we will not be able to meet with anyone there particularly. But we will be in that area. We will visit St. John the Baptist mm-hmm. Church. We will be there in the rededication. Bishop mm-hmm. Soto will celebrate the Mass.
Oh, good.
Father Mike Reeder and his people have done a great job doing a remodelation of the interior of the church. It looks beautiful now. So we will be there. Then we will be in the Abbey of New Clairvaux. In Vina.
Oh, in Vina.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Vina.
In the walnut orchards.
Yeah, visiting around, meeting the monks too. That's our intention. So we'll be in that area, also Corning and Orland.
Very good.
The last day of our pilgrimage is going to be on Sunday, May 30th, because we will be participating in two parishes, one in Immaculate Conception in Corning.
Right.
Some seminarians will be there for the 10 a.m. Mass.
Oh, good. Okay, so the 10 a.m. Mass will be in Corning.
In Corning.
Great.
But also, at the same time, in Anderson, in the parish of Sacred Heart, the Masses at 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. will be also served by the seminarians. So with this, I'm saying that people who attend those Masses in Corning and in in Anderson, mm-hmm. they will get to see the seminarians and to hear their stories.
Right.
In the end, we will finish with a big gathering in Anderson, at 1:30 p.m.
Great.
Father Raj has done, he's doing also a gathering there for all of us.
And for those that don't know Anderson, it's a cute little town tucked between Red Bluff and Redding, mm-hmm. just off of Interstate 5, just on the west side of Interstate 5.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're
yeah. Right. And a very lovely parish.
It's a beautiful place, you're right.
Yeah.
So this is a plan. This is a pilgrimage. You see, every day we are visiting different parishes, and we are available. The seminars are going to be available to meet with young people. I just sent this calendar to that calendar I do have in your hands. I sent it to the different parishes pastors, so that they may be able to publicize it in the local parish.
Very good, Father Memo. I hope you get great turnouts to all this. I'll probably see you in Lake Tahoe.
I hope.
It's so beautiful up there.
It is.
And that parish is just kind of tucked in the trees there. It's just, I have all these favorite parishes in the diocese, and I realized one day, every time I name a parish, I say it's my favorite parish because they're all so unique and so special.
Yeah, it is indeed. The structure of the parish itself, the closeness to the lake.
Yeah.
And it brings a sense of peace in that area.
Yeah.
Safety and peace.
Yeah, you can be on the stretch coming into Tahoe on Highway 50, and you can see St. Teresa's on one side, and you can see the lake on the other.
Exactly.
You know, they're just right there.
That's very nice. Hopefully, hopefully we can meet you there.
Very good. Bob. Father, always a pleasure. Thanks for all you do. God bless your mission.
On the contrary, thank you for allowing God to talk to the hearts of people through this radio station, through your work, through your skills, then to your team. And then I want to give thanks to all the audience for this opportunity that you are giving me to talk to you. And pray, please, for more vocations from your families, from your parishes. And hopefully we can meet in one of these events.
Very, very good. Yes, we all will pray for vocations. Thank you, Father.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand, for that wonderful introduction, and appreciate all you have done and continue to do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. And Bishop Wiegand will be one of the celebrants of Holy Mass on Memorial Day, a special Memorial Day Mass, remembering our fallen heroes. Of course, Memorial Day does honor those who have died in wars defending the United States. Memorial Day this year, May 31st, the final day of May, there will be a 10 a.m. Mass at throughout all three cemeteries here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Calvary, 7101 Verner Avenue in Citrus Heights, and Bishop Wiegand will be there. St. Mary's Cemetery at 6509 Fruit Ridge Road here in Sacramento. Bishop Soto will be celebrating there in Holy Mass at All Souls, 550 Glen Cove Road in Vallejo. Father Glenn Jerome will be there celebrating Mass. And everyone is invited. Seating will be limited, so call and make a reservation, 916-452-4831, 916-452-4831, or go to CFCS, that's Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, CFCSSacramento.org/events. Well, we are pleased to welcome in Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. Jane, it's been a while. Welcome back.
It is. Thank you. It's so good to be talking with you.
Good to be talking with you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Today is one of those days that can't decide if it's spring or summer or winter, or we're just in that in-between zone. So
we've kind of got a mix, which is what spring is, right? It's a mix of winter and a mix of summer, so we're just enjoying it. It is a particularly gorgeous day the Lord made today.
Yes, pleased to have you with us, and
thank you.
You know, a lot of things happening for families in during COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because obviously some people got very sick. A great number of people died,
mm-hmm.
Especially early on when this caught everybody by surprise and nobody really knew how to treat it. And there are a lot of heroes out there putting their lives on the line, mm-hmm. first responders, doctors, nurses, orderlies, everybody else, custodians in the hospitals. I mean, you know, forget all the cafeteria cooks and all the people working to help the people who were sick and really putting their lives at great risk. And yet many people managed to somehow dodge this thing. And, even though it may have been frustrating, you couldn't go to the ball game, you couldn't go to the movies, you couldn't even walk around the block there for a while. A lot of us had some really meaningful family time that we wouldn't have had before.
You know, it's interesting, and it's one of the, how do they say it? One of the gifts, one of the treasures that came out of a very difficult time, which we're definitely not out of yet, but we've been in it long enough to now look back and, what do they say, hindsight is 2020. And rather abruptly, we were thrown back into family time. All mm-hmm. those things that our kids were scheduled for were canceled. School was no longer in a brick and mortar, but at home via a screen and so on. But while that brought its own new things to a family life, families found themselves with just a lot more time together. And that was really one of the gifts, and looking for the positives and how, you know, the Lord said he could bring good out of anything by looking at it through what he did. And he brought so much good out of it that definitely was, you know, when we could walk back around the block. And I see all kinds of families in the park playing. I see college kids playing basketball again at the park. When's the last time you saw that?
Oh, I know.
Yeah. But that, you know, family life has always been important, but particularly now through COVID, the family is really stretched with more responsibility. Families, whether they've had an interruption in income or now we're concerned about the front and center of their kids' schooling, in addition to trying to just keep their family safe and what's going on and stay on top of everything. And it's really been a stretch. I think families have really pulled them different ways.
Yeah.
And but God's always there, you know.
He is. I tell the kids that every morning, and so does my wife, you know, that God has not left the building. He's still here, still with you. You know, you may be frustrated about this or, you know, bummed about that or saying it's not fair, you know.
Yes. And God is. And how lucky your children are to have the two of you with the same message. And I think this past year, it's really bringing it to bear for families weren't quite there in their faith, were kind of like, well, we're doing okay, you know, don't really need God, you know, and then things get challenging. And it's turning families back to their faith, and how it can seem so overwhelming, yet it's so purposeful. And when I look at it all through the lens of God, I see just this huge readjustment of going, what went on, of families, neighbors, next door, the next door app where you sign up by your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately people were on it. Okay, I'm going to the store. You seniors that can't get out, stay home. We don't know what's going on yet. You know, I've got the necessary PPE that I can get out. And I found something on the grocery store. I bought two. Does anybody need whatever it is? So there was a great, quickly there was a unity among complete strangers. And we kind of reacquainted ourselves with our human family. And what a blessing that is. And I think that still continues from watching what's going on around me.
Yeah, I saw somebody, it may have been on Nextdoor, saying, whoever thought that a man or a person's wealth would be dependent upon how much toilet paper they had in the in the hall closet, you know, it's like...
Yes,
oh, I'm a rich man. I have a 12-pack. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh.
Yes. As a matter of fact, in our neighborhood, it showed up on Nextdoor, a knock at the door and someone going out, and there was a roll of toilet paper on their porch.
Oh, wow.
And they went out to see, like, where did this come from? You know, this was manna from heaven.
And the kids are going, remember when we used to throw it up on trees?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And there was a family with their small child pulling the wagon, and they had the toilet paper on the wagon, and they were just going around the block putting it on every door as they went.
How wonderful.
Just that it's going to be okay, folks. We've all got each other. We're all taking care of each other. But ultimately, it's bringing it back to God. And the biggest challenge in talking about God's heart and hands ministry is that families, the parents, are the connection between God and our children. We form the future by how we shape our children, how we form them, connected to God or not. And then going back to when this started, when I was an engineer and seeing just that pull that women go through for the professional world, the paycheck versus raising children, and trying to navigate that, and it's evolved into, it's not just moms that are God's heart and hands, because then society was pulling away at the mothers saying, hey, leave the home, put them in a kind of good daycare, and then go get your paycheck. Is that it's pulling at the fathers, too. And so, especially with COVID, and it's pulling many different ways, is that the family, it's never been a more important time for the family to influence society and to hold up what is sacred and to hold boundaries. No, you're not going here. This is what's important. We know how to raise our kids. This is what we're going to do. And how to turn to the Lord in the midst of all the chaos, when everything under our feet is changing. And I think that's where the family is pivotal right now, because we have the spotlight shining on us collectively, whether it's the big family like we were talking about in Nextdoor, or the personal family, our extended families, and so on.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and families, we haven't changed the definition of a family, but the old-fashioned, traditional family, many kids are not being raised in that environment anymore for a variety of reasons. Sometimes death, certainly a drastically increased divorce rate, increase of people having kids out of marriage. Every child, last time I checked, has two parents, biological parents, but not necessarily, sometimes a parent they don't even know or barely know. Many kids, you know, are living with their grandparents. And we see this throughout the schools. And, you know, everybody is in a it's not the old Ozzie and Harriet family, if you will.
Right.
I know that's before your time, but
I've read about it.
You've read about it. Yeah, you've heard about it. You watch it at midnight. You binge watch it.
Yes, but you bring up a really good point. Even families today are it's not the same definition. And I would offer that going through the last 15 months with the virus, is that, that even whatever model you've got is pulled even more, is from income to having to get multiple part-time jobs in order to make ends meet and so on. But it all comes back to, where's the faith in the family? Mm-hmm. Who has it and who holds it? And something that's become, I've become keenly aware of, is when only one parent holds that faith, even if it is a two-parent home, if you're fortunate enough to have grandparents living with you or close by, when only one parent in the house holds the faith, it's more common than not, as we know, but it's a special situation that I think deserves some attention. And what it's like when you've got one parent that is faith-based and the other that's not. And it creates quite a push-pull in the family. And then how is that parent to bring the faith, to keep it going, up against either ambivalence or up against a negative response?
Yeah, and frequently it can happen in a family, certainly, but it can also happen very frequently in divorce, where both parents have contact with the children, a significant contact with the children, maybe even split time or something, if they mm-hmm. live relatively close together, and one says, well, we're going to Mass on Sunday, and another one says, well, we're not going to Mass on Sunday, you know, and
right.
And sometimes courts have been sympathetic to that, you know, mm-hmm. and have said that on Sundays, whichever spouse can take them to Mass, even if it's not their weekend or their week with the child or their month with the child or whatever. Mm-hmm. Frequently, depending on the age of the child, a court will leave it up to a child, not an 8-year-old, but maybe a 13 or 14-year-old. You know, is this something you want to do? You know, you are a member of this faith, and we encourage in this country freedom of religion, and we encourage religious devotion, as long as it's not ordered by the government, and it's where judges get into, you know, they feel like they're getting into the weeds a little bit, like, okay, what can I order or allow here, and what can't I? But I've seen some good judges say, okay, we encourage freedom of religion. Your religion teaches that going to Mass on Sunday is part and parcel of the deal. It's really important for you to do this. And if you believe that and feel that that's the case, then we're going to allow that to happen, because in every custody case, the underlying what's supposed to happen is not what the parents want. It's the best interest of the child. It's not even if it's not fair to one parent or another parent or either parent, mm-hmm. it's still the best interest of the child. And if the child is, and it's not just if he's Catholic, it could be, or she, it could be any one of a number of faiths, saying mm-hmm. that this is, it'd be no different than, truly, than the child is in choir or something, not necessarily a religious choir, but a choir at the junior high school.
Right, or playing a sport.
Or playing a sport. And the one parent says, oh, I don't believe in football. I'm not taking you to football practice when you're with me. Well, that doesn't serve the child's interest. It might serve the parent's interest, but it doesn't serve the child's interest. And you know, you could just, I'm sure a judge would say, well, he's going to football practice.
Right.
I don't care who's got custody that day. He's going to football practice. You guys work it out, and if you can't work it out, I'll work it out. You know,
mm-hmm.
but and it's it can be that way in a split family, mm-hmm. but it can be difficult, especially difficult if the split is they're spending 3 months of the summer with somebody with a parent who lives across the country.
Yes, it is, and making the best of a difficult situation, but keeping, and what a wonderful judge that is to hold what's best for the child in highest esteem. And so much of that we've really learned about the family and how the family affects, you know, reform the future by how we raise a child. One person, one judge made that decision that affected that child's future. and form to those parents, saying, okay, parents, as you move through this, this is your number one goals, what's best for the child, whatever inconvenience or so on, you have to set that aside. And that's the importance of a family. It's that, once again, one person makes that decision. And going through this, it's one person making a decision at a time for something to continue, whether good or bad.
Yeah.
And we have that influence as a family, as parents, that we are called. We are the one person that stands between our child and God, and we're supposed to bring them, right, as the first teachers, and we bring them the faith, and we live the faith, and how beautifully you and your wife do it, just by talking to your kids every day, just role modeling it. It's integrated in your life. You know,
yeah,
it's part of who you and your wife are.
Yeah, I mean, if you maintain the best relationship with your children, and they see you going to Mass every Sunday, and they see you praying the rosary, and they see you talking about God around the dinner table, and reading the good book, or just talking about issues in a moral sense. I mean, you can look at any of the issues of the day that are out there, and you can bring it back to, we need to pray for those people. Or, you know, I mean, you look at the conflict in the Middle East now, and the border issues, the immigration issues, all those things, where you boil it down to, you know, God made us all, you know. You know, look at the, you know, when he's going to separate the sheep from the goats. Did you visit me in prison? Did you welcome the stranger? Did you did you feed me when I was hungry? And he says, not me, the least of my brothers. You know, when you did it to them, you did it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can bring almost any issue of the day into Matthew 25 and and everything else, and say, hey, you know, the good Lord made me. The good Lord made all these people. The good Lord loves you like your mom and dad loves you, except way more, if you can believe it.
And more perfectly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the Middle East, when one of my adult children was filling me in on the details, I just kept uttering, I have to say a rosary. I need to pray. Okay, got it. Because what we know about the rosary, what the Blessed Mother has told us and so many church-approved apparitions, is pray the rosary, please, you need to change the world. And and the miracles that have been associated with it, and that's the most powerful thing we can do.
The Pope, you know, dedicated the month of May. Well, he wasn't first, but you know, a rosary marathon. Let's pray the rosary every day, and we'll do it from a different shrine every day, you know, and televise it. And it's really, and to think that the whole world's praying it with you, that's not necessarily the whole world, but people all over the whole world. It's very uniting.
It is, and what was it a week ago? To show the effect of their prayer, the CDC said we don't need masks anymore.
Yeah.
And the states have to work through it. But
and they specifically said that if you're doing a radio interview from home, you don't have to wear a mask.
Oh, good. I can take
off. The CDC, they made a special, they put an asterisk and said that, that.
They did. But, you know, it's really true. It's the effect of the rosary. And reading in St. Louis de Montfort's writings on the rosary is when we say it in a group, they all become bound together and become unbreakable. And that we have, the angels and so on have more power, more spiritual power when we say it in a group versus just saying, individually has power too. But when you gather around the table, or I've done it with a book group that used to meet in person pre-COVID, we would do it on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost, I would say, after really getting deeper into what a Blessed Mother's been telling us, I would say we really have a moral imperative to speak that strongly, to say the rosary. In whatever capacity, wherever we're called to, in every way possible. Some people do it while driving. Some people do it beginning of the day, end of the day, pieces throughout the way. What Padre Pio did it constantly, right? He had one of the monks help him wash the other hand, so the opposite hand was holding the rosary, and then he would switch.
Right.
So he didn't have to stop saying the rosary. And I would love to have somebody take care of everything else. I could sit and say the rosary. But even as us busy parents who are beleaguered, it can become part of walking the dog, cooking the meal, driving to work. And because we have to think about something. And if we're calling on the Blessed Mother and we're praying to her, they say only later will we find out how powerful our prayers were and what they did.
Indeed.
But it's important.
Yes, yes, it is. It is so important, and I think people underestimate the power of prayer. They underestimate the rosary. I heard somebody refer to it as an ancient ritual to me the other day, and I said, "Well, it may be ancient, but ancient ritual puts it in a category that doesn't quite sound right to me." You know,
You know, that means it stood the test of time.
Stood the test of time. That's well put. Well put.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, not to put it in a category that's dusty, but it has stood the test of time, and that we actually have miracles that have been directly attributed to it.
Absolutely.
And have been, and we know that. So yeah. Then the family, as a family, whatever that family picture looks like, and for the parents that are just six different ways, they're pulled at once, and the ground under their feet is changing, there is a stable place, and the stable place is where your mind and heart are. And if it's like, okay, God, I'm going through this day with you, I'm not letting go of your hand, I know you're going to see me through. I know that even Hebrews 11:7, by faith Noah, warned about what was not yet seen, with reverence built an ark for the salvation of his household. He was the one person again. And he did it to save his household as God guided him, but he didn't know what he was doing other than he was just told to do it. So he didn't know what was coming, much like we don't know the future, but we've been told to pray the rosary.
Indeed.
And we've been told in Matthew 17:20, nothing will be impossible for you. We turn it over to the Lord. He does everything.
Nothing will be impossible for you. I love that. Jane, we're going to end with that. That's
okay.
A wonderful thought. Matthew 17:20, nothing will be impossible for you. If you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. I'm gonna try that with Mount Whitney.
I think so.
Maybe Mount Shasta, since it's in the diocese. I'll start locally.
Start locally, work your way up.
I'll start locally. Next time you're up I-5 and you don't see Mount Shasta, you'll know what happened.
Well, it does make you wonder. If the Lord said that, wow.
Has anybody really tried it with faith? Yeah.
I'm not sure. I just know I'm going to make my faith bigger. I'm going to keep praying that rosary.
Very good. Jane, always a joy. Thanks so much. God bless you
and your
family.
Thank you, Bob. God bless you, too.
Yeah, thanks so much. That's Jane Lee, God's in Heart and Hand Ministry, and just doing great work here in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
Joy of the Lord is our strength.